Hello and welcome to Quilter Cheviot's Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at Quilter Cheviot. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on or by following hashtag QC Weekly Comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Jack Bishop, investment manager based out of our Manchester office. And this week, I'm pleased to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and Chris Beckett, our head of equity research. Richard, a very busy week. And if I'm honest, I'm not entirely sure where to start. But if we talk through the headlines, we've had Nvidia's earnings, Starmer's announcement, the UK's increasing its defence spending to 2.5% of GDP by 2027. Various world leaders visiting Trump in the US, including the Prime Minister, as well as Macron. And on Friday, President Zelensky travelled to Washington to sign a critical minerals deal, which didn't exactly go to plan, to put it mildly, after a fiery exchange. Seemed to be a bit of a premeditated ambush by J.D. Vance and Trump. And that was followed then by a meeting in Europe of major leaders across the continent in London on Sunday. And then a different week, a different tariff. Trump turned his attention to the EU this time, threatening tariffs of 25% on cars and all other things. And we also had the tax and spending cuts budget resolution passed by the House of Representatives over in the States, which I'll come on to shortly. So, Richard, turn to markets. We saw volatility in both bonds and equities following the disappointing economic data in the US. So the Conference Board's consumer confidence measure fell to, I think it was an 8-month low. So that was its steepest decline in a few years. And on Friday, the Fed's preferred measure of inflation was released, which showed the inflation adjusted consumer spending falling by 0.5% in January. And then the Atlanta Fed's GDP Now forecast fell considerably, now implies a contraction in Q1, although subject to change. So on that economic data, Richard, we had that hawkish cut from the Fed back in December, and the market had made its peace that there'd be very little in the way of rate cuts in 2025. But in just the past kind of couple of weeks or so, we've seen a whole 25 basis points of rate cuts priced in now, and Treasury yields fell very sharply last week, down 22 basis points, seventh consecutive weekly decline. So although Trump and the Treasury Secretary are wanting to target that reduction in yields rather than interest rates, do you think that decline is positive, or is it perhaps a sign of economic weakness creeping in?
Yeah, I certainly don't think the market's paid too much attention to Treasury Secretary's aim to keep 10-year yields down. I think, actions definitely speak louder than words on that sort of side of things. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a risk-off move, actually. I mean, you've seen not just seen a rally in Treasury yields, you've seen wider credit spreads as well. Corporate bonds have been doing really well couple of years, and you've started to see a bit of weakness in that area. So I think it's a risk-off move. There's definitely a sense of just how much chaos and sort of uncertainty there is emanating from the White House with a sort of stop-go policy on tariffs and defence and everything else. And you're starting to see that denting confidence a bit. You mentioned some of the surveys. It's not just consumers who are a little bit nonplussed with it all. It's obviously markets as well. I think there's also a sense that, you know, some of the worries about Trump coming in and causing massive inflation hasn't really materialized yet. So there's still, sort of ample scope for, potentially for the Fed to be cutting rates as we go forward. But I think overall it's a bit of economic uncertainty. I mean, things like the Atlanta Fed, those indicators are pretty volatile. And there's also been bad weather in the States, as there usually is in Q1. So that's sort of maybe overstating the weakness. But I think, as you say, it's been a pretty good couple of weeks for US Treasury markets.
Absolutely. And then, as I said before, a lot of activity at the White House, but over on Capitol Hill, the passing of that budget by the House was quite interesting. So some of the Republicans had threatened to rebel, but fell into line. So Trump definitely ruling with an iron fist there. So the budget that they pass proposes $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and $2 trillion in spending cuts. So not you can see the maths there. So it could pass by budget reconciliation if approved in the Senate. So where would that leave us on the US deficit and maybe the wider impact on the bond markets, do you think? So I think Republicans not really too concerned about deficits once they're in power, it seems.
No, apparently not. Certainly like some tax cuts. I mean, the whole budgetary process in Washington does take some time to get your head around, to be quite honest. You know, the sort of events last week of sort of agreeing various bills and things, there's still a long way to go. You know, I was looking at latest views out of Washington. It's going to take some time, months basically, to get those tax cuts approved. There's lots of negotiations on both sides to take place. I mean, clearly, you know, deficit situation in the States is not good. It's not good here. And there's no, I mean, you've had all the DOGE, you know, efficiency drive and all that. But you know, as far as we can tell, that's not really touched the side so far in terms of the US deficit. So they're borrowing too much money. And until they, you know, really get a grip of that, it's always going to be a worry for the bond market. I think there's a couple of things coming up in the shorter term before we get to those sort of tax cuts and all the rest of it. They've got to agree a continuing resolution on government spending by mid-March. Otherwise, we could be in for another sort of temporary government shutdown. And then also they need to get the debt ceiling sorted out probably by the summer, or otherwise the whole sort of rumours about, you know, government defaults and all the rest of it could come back into play. All of these things will probably get resolved without too much of a fuss and will sail on as normal. But, you know, clearly creates a lot of scope for negative headlines out of Washington.
Speaking of budgets, so over in the UK, so defence spending increasing to 2.5% and 3% in the next parliament, which of course is quite vague, and we're pinching a bit for the international aid budget to fudge it. Fiscally, can the UK really afford to do that? And what would the impact be, Rachel Rees, as we look ahead perhaps to a spring statement and then the gilt market more broadly?
Well, given that sort of Trump seems to be having a sort of fairly lukewarm approach to NATO and seems to be a big friend or fan of Vladimir Putin, I don't think UK and much of Europe really has much of a choice in terms of ramping up defence spending. I mean, fiscally, it's going to be difficult. I mean, obviously, like you say, the first increase, the 2.5% one, you know, they've just taken it from one pot of government spending and moved it to another. And okay, that's cost them a ministerial sort of resignation. But other than that, it was pretty hard for you know, supporters of international aid to really pitch in and defend against that, I'm afraid, given what's going on in the world at the moment. The 3% hurt target is much harder, and they've got time to, hopefully, they've got time to sort of, you know, work that out if it's not going to be until the next parliament. I mean, for gilt markets will be watching and worrying about that, and, you know, is Rachel Reeves going to break her targets? But the truth is, they're probably going to have to find the savings from other parts of the budget, which might mean, I suspect, things like welfare spending. It could mean more tax cuts, but there's a long way to go until they sort that out. So I don't think gilts are going to be sort of too bothered. I think the key thing is, you know, we're kind of all hoping that, frankly, Russia gives us time and isn't about to do anything too disastrous. It gives us time to ramp up defence spending over the next few years, because it can't happen overnight, frankly. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts on that one.
Certainly is, Richard. So thank you for that. Chris, turning to you now, thanks for joining us. Firstly, if we focus on your sector, you recently returned from the States, attending the CAGNY conference. So could you bring all of our listeners up to date what it is, which companies you heard from, and any topics or speakers that you found particularly interesting?
Yeah, thank you. So CAGNY Conference, the Consumer Analyst Group of New York Conference, is the most important consumer staples conference of the year. So the biggest food, drink, tobacco, household goods companies all presenting to investors, taking a slightly longer term look at their own businesses. Pretty much all companies have already reported their year-end numbers, so we know where they are short term, and getting management to take a slightly longer term look at what's going to be successful in those industries. I've got to say, I came away with a feeling that it was all a little bit subdued. The US consumer is still under pressure. A lot of companies talking about value-seeking behaviors from customers. So the companies very much having to show that there is something worth paying for in their products and using pack sizes and pricing to demonstrate value to consumers. We're also getting quite a lot of post-COVID normalization. So previously strong areas, spirits in alcoholic beverages, pet food, coffee, things that did very well through COVID are taking quite a long time to normalize. And that normalization phase that we're still going means much slower growth in terms of sales. In addition, some of the companies are having to cope with higher commodity prices. Price of chocolate has been going up very strongly on the back of cocoa prices. It'll have to keep going up. But even with those price increases, the big chocolate companies, Mondelez and Hershey, are going to have quite significantly lower profits this year. Long term, we still like them as a category. People like eating chocolate, but trying to manage that commodity spike is very difficult. That's probably my big takeaway, that categories still matter. There are areas which are doing very well. Soft drinks, particularly carbonated soft drinks, Coca-Cola are managing their categories well. The tobacco companies, it's not a declining industry. Nicotine addiction in all its forms is growing slightly and quite consistently. And the big tobacco companies are pretty well positioned to profit from it. It's the packaged food side and particularly weaker brands that are under pressure. Talking of food companies, food regulation, and this is going back to Trump and the appointment of RFK Jr. as Secretary for Health and Human Services. On the one hand, he's an anti-vaccine sort of tinfoil hat wearing nutter, but some of his environmental credentials and what he wants to do about improving food ingredients and nutritional quality plays into what some of the better placed food ingredients companies. So if you are a big packaged food company and you want to make your breakfast cereal for, say, slightly healthier and improve the ingredient list, you go to a McCormick or a Kerry, the value-added food ingredients companies, to reformulate your products. So regulation in the States, improving the quality of the food, there's some winners around ingredients companies. Probably less talked about anti-obesity drugs. I'm expecting a lot of comment about GLP-1 drugs, so Wegovy, Ozempic, and others. Probably not quite the existential risk that we were worrying about in terms of affecting food and drink consumption people were concerned about a year ago. It will have an impact, but quite a more moderate impact than we originally worried about. I think overall, where I came away from was still wanting to buy the best managed companies in the best subcategories, but being quite careful not to overpay. We saw what happened with Walmart, a company, food retail company, that announced their results about a week ago. Very good results, but the valuation was very much up there. So a negative reaction to good results because the valuation had got ahead of itself.
No, it sounds like a very worthwhile visit. So that's good to hear, Chris. And I know you're not our tech analyst, so I won't hold you to it, but I've got to ask you about NVIDIA's results whilst you're on. So seems to me, anyway, that the company did enough. What was your take?
Well, if I looked up a stock chart. NVIDIA started the week at $135. It closed the week at $125. So investors didn't take the results particularly well. And I think the big message here was where expectations were. They beat expectations, but people have got used to them smashing expectations. They didn't do that. In terms of sales, it was the smallest revenue beat to forecast for 2 years. On an absolute basis, their sales grew 78%, which for any other sector or any other company would be an amazing result. But for Nvidia, valuation where it is, expectations and people being used to them raising those expectations every time, not quite good enough. Where they put first quarter guidance was above market expectations, but it's going to be 68% revenue growth, not the 78 they just reported. I think overall we like Nvidia. We think that they've got a pretty sustainable advantage in the types of semiconductor chips that are used in data centers for AI applications. We think that's a competitive advantage can persist for a number of years. When we look at the valuation, it's trading on 23 times its expected profits for this year for 25% earnings growth, which in any other sector would be a pretty good trade-off. I think the difficulty for Nvidia is it's a fast-moving area of technology. A lot of CapEx is going into the sector in terms of AI applications. We're not sure what the returns on that investment is going to be and how sustainable that level of CapEx is going to be. So pretty confident about their performance for the next 2 or 3 years. The very live debate is where demand is going to be in 5 years' time.
Yeah, quite unfair, like you say, considering the results that they've put out. But year to date, I think it's probably linked into this. We've seen that divergence between US and European markets. So Euro stocks hitting all-time highs, and the US has been a bit weaker, dragged down by the very names that have led the market over the last 2 years. So could you just give us your take on why you think that's happened? And is it a sign of a healthier market, do you think?
I think firstly, it's good to see European and UK stocks doing better. So year to date, we've had Europe up about 10%, the US up 2%. But within that, the so-called Magnificent Seven, very big tech-related companies in all its forms, down about 9%. So the rest of the US market not doing that badly. Those largest companies, I think their year-end results were a little bit mixed, but they're all down. So where we are now, Nvidia down 6%, Alphabet down 10, Microsoft down 6, Apple down 4. I think it's probably as much that valuations and expectations had got ahead of themselves. They've had a very good run for the last 2 years, and a very good run since the US presidential election in November. So a little bit of normalization from those levels of appreciation. I think if you look at Europe, it's useful to see what has been driving the market, which sectors have done well. The banks have done well. So what's happening in terms of macroeconomics and interest rate expectations in Europe, everything that Richard was talking about, is pretty good for European banks. So they've had a very good run. And obviously the aerospace and defense, there's some pure play companies in Europe, but a lot of industrial companies have an element of their business that sells into aerospace and defense. President Trump may be a lot of things, but the one we don't talk about much is he's the best cheerleader for defense company stocks that we've got. There is a very real need for Europeans to spend more on their own defense, so we are not beholden on whatever America may choose or not choose to do in the future. We may not easily have the money to spend on it, but the necessity is there, and the likes of British Aerospace and its European equivalents will profit from that. And I think Overall, it's a reminder to us that eventually valuations matter. US market is comprised of better quality companies than Europe, but valuations take account of it. So lower valuations in Europe and the UK make it easier for those markets to appreciate on. They don't need perfect news flow and improvements in sentiment to make advances. There are a few things to worry about, but broadly, what's happening is fairly market friendly. The German elections that we had a week ago, it looks like the governing coalition will be a centrist grand coalition rather than including any of the more extreme elements. So the whole economic outlook for Europe and political outlook, despite some of the headlines, isn't as bad as it could have been.
No, that's really helpful, Chris, to try and paint the picture as to why we've seen that divergence here today. And I guess it does come down, as you said, to kind of sector leadership and rotation. So thanks for those thoughts, Chris, and thanks to Richard for your views as well, and to all of you for listening. So did you enjoy the discussion on the podcast today? We'd love to hear from our listeners. So please review the show now, wherever you're listening, and share it on your socials and tag us at QuiltsCheviot. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button, and we'll be back next week. But in the meantime, head over to our website, www.quiltscheviot.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. And you can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or on our social media pages. And if you've got any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast, simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. And that's it for today. So thank you again to both Richard and Chris for your time, and to all of you for listening. See you next time.